Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week for your eardrum place's pleasure. And my very special guests are from Joy Camp. Guys, welcome to the program.
Hey, Vinny. Thanks for having us, man.
Vinny!
Okay, so we've got two of you here. Introduce yourselves, man.
Cool. All right. My name is Benny.
I'm Kevin.
And we are the creators of Joy Camp.
Now, are you like me, in which case you thought, you know, there's times where you feel like somebody who's got the documents, and other times you feel like, you know what, life's really stressful. It's even more stressful learning every day about how I'm being exterminated. I need to have some fun.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was our thoughts exactly in creating Joy Camp, letting off some steam, having some fun with this devastating information.
All right. Well, technically, you're my competition then. Only competition that I've found so far.
And we're allies.
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. Okay, well can you actually explain the story? Is there like a story, you know, like how Joy Camp actually got rolling?
Yeah. Sort of. Well, first, this little event called 9/11 occurred.
And, have you heard of it? Have you heard about 9/11?
Yeah, it was about 12 years ago.
It rings a bell.
Yeah, some buildings fell down for a reason that was led to believe that was by terrorists and airplanes. Didn't really make sense, and we didn't buy into it. And it sort of led us down this never-ending rabbit hole. And for about 8 or 9 years, we were traveling down that rabbit hole and not really knowing what to do with the information, but all the while still enjoying life and having a good time and laughing about life. And then we stumbled upon Joy Camp. We decided to turn our information into comedy and make it hopefully accessible to people who were, you know, looking for a lighter way to absorb information.
And I just remember watching one of your recent videos, I think, called Suicided. It was funny.
Yeah.
We wanted to do that one for a while because we figured if we put that video out, that it's proof that we'll never kill ourselves. So we're covering
Facts. Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know what it is. How do comedians actually deal with this problem? Because I found that I've been looking at comedians all over the place, you know, like Carlin, Bill Hicks, and so many others that tend to be really cynical bastards at the end of the day, and that's what comedians really are. They're cynical people who see through to the truth of things and attempt to make other people laugh because they've kind of lost it to a large degree.
Yeah, true. That's a good point.
Very true.
Yeah, we're actually not.
What is that?
I think, you know, I've never really thought about that, but now that you're saying it, maybe it has to do with the lack of community that they had when they were in their prime. I mean, I think that the internet has really brought us together, and we're able to connect with other like-minded people much easier than they were. I mean, Bill Hicks was doing it all by himself with no support, and he probably didn't have that many people to talk to who were of the same mindset.
Yeah, and then you look at, like, Lenny Bruce or something, and that guy who was doing it years before anyone else, he got run out of the business. You know, I don't know if you're familiar with his story, but that guy's story, he was on this rise to fame preaching messages that people hadn't really heard before, and they shut him down for it. He couldn't perform in a studio to save his life at the end of the day until his death. I mean, it's really one of those tragic stories you'd ever hear about a comedian. And he was out there doing the same thing. So times have changed a little bit. I admire those people. These are our heroes that you've named, right? I admire them because they did all this with just a microphone and a stage. And we have all these tools, you know, we have a camera and YouTube and all that. So the game has changed a little, and we're just trying to take advantage of the change.
As far as I'm concerned, those comedians have really paved the way for people like us. Essentially, they're not only our inspirations, but they've also softened up the general populace so that they can actually deal with this kind of comedy, because it's freaking dark. Really,
if you
strip back the smiles, you strip back the laughs, you strip back the satire, we're dealing about horrific torture and death.
Yeah, the most unfunny information available, and we're trying to make light of it.
Now, is that a form of alchemy? When you take what is horrible, suffering and dying, and you turn it into love and comedy,
spinning it into gold. Yeah, sure, it is. Yeah, comedy alchemy. Comedic alchemy.
Comalchemy.
It's a form of polygamy.
Yeah, polygamy.
Exactly. Same difference.
Yeah, two of my favorite things.
Yeah. I was coming up with some really lame jokes last night. You know why they call it Mossad? Because it ain't there to make you more happy.
There it is.
Beautiful. That's
time well spent.
Yes. It's what you call a depressed mustache. Mossad.
Oh, there it is. Good one.
Yeah, how late were you up thinking of those?
Yeah, I don't know. And another person was telling me about abalone. You know what abalone is? It's like some form of a barnacle crustacean thingy, apparently.
Yeah, I have an abalone shell, actually.
Yeah, apparently it's like $50 a pound. I didn't know what abalone was. I thought it was some kind of bologna that you can only buy with alimony. Mm-hmm. And it didn't... and apparently I'm not really all that keen to eat it anyway, bro, because of all the Fukushima radiation and stuff like that, you know? Unless the waiter's got a Geiger counter on him, you know, wave it over my food.
It's already cooked when it comes out of the ocean.
So you can't work like an abalone and cheese sandwich, or does that not work?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. Apparently, if a fisherman tells a lie, it's somebody accuses them of telling abalone stories.
There it is. Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's a fact.
That is
a fact. Not a joke.
That's the first fact of the interview.
Yeah, exactly. We like to cover serious issues on this show.
Let's try to be
from
serious
time to time.
Yeah,
let's change it up today.
Yeah, we're gonna be very serious.
Yeah. Well, how old are you guys?
29. Both of us are 29.
Yeah, 29.
Okay. I'm 28 going on 29, so yeah. What is it about our age group, eh?
Fair enough.
So, yeah, we're older.
Yeah, we're in our, what is it called? Saturn return right now.
Ah. And have you still got a slave job, or are you doing this full time?
Well, it depends on what you call a slave job.
Mine I would call a slave job. Yeah, I would call mine a slave job. I have a slave job, but it's been good to me in a lot of ways. I got a lot of travel out of my job, and I work from home, right in that bedroom back there. So I spend a lot of time editing our videos while I'm working, which is kind of nice. And no one from my work is listening to this, so I can say whatever I want about it.
And my slave jobs, one of them is as a teacher at a middle school. I do arts at a middle school, and I'm an actor. So I'm kind of a slave to the show business industry in a way, willingly. But yeah, that's how I make my money.
Well, it's good that you've managed to pull your skills of your slave jobs and actually put it into something that's really worthwhile. And I don't know about you, but I haven't worked for anybody for what's it been like seven years or something since I became an activist filmmaker and things like that. And I feel like my listeners are my employers, really. They're the ones who fund the show and everything, so I've just got to do what they say.
But, yeah, I'm a terrible employee. I always have been. I like being my own boss.
I had to, man. That's the goal, you know. We're working our asses. Are we allowed to cuss on the show?
You're not allowed to cuss on the show.
Okay.
You can say ass, but you can't say you have to say BS instead of the other word. You have to say frack instead of the other word, or instead of the other word, you have to say Shiite Muslim.
Shiite Muslim.
All right.
Got it.
Well, I've been working my fracking Shiite Muslim off, trying to make this our full-time gig, and hopefully we'll get there soon.
Well, you know, sometimes you just got to take the plunge and just go, you know what, frack it. I'm going full-time right now, right here. And it's funny when that happens is because I've seen a lot of people do this. They've given up their job, even though they don't have any, you know, income or career stability at the time in order to do what they really want to do. And everything seems to work out for them.
Yep.
As an old Zen saying, leap and the net will appear.
Really? I've never heard that saying.
We have a magnet on our fridge with that on it.
Mm. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
And in terms of waking up, you know, you've you woke up due to 9/11. Who were your sources and your websites and blogs and things like that you first started going to?
Early on, it was David Icke, I think.
David Icke, Alex Jones were the obvious ones at the beginning, and also movies like Loose Change was big, really influential. I showed a lot of people that movie when I was in college. And then Zeitgeist also. These type of films were very influential to, you know.
Yeah, and then moving forward, we got into Max Egan very heavily still. I think that's how I heard you for the first time, was him being on your show. And
Red Ice Creations.
Red Ice Creations and Santos Padacci. And now we have a lot of friends now on the movement. Cameron Wiltshire, he's over at Sacred Geometry International. Mm-hmm. I think you're friends with him. He's a big, big supporter of ours, big help of us.
And Gnostic Media, Tragedy and Hope.
Richard Grove.
Yeah. So a lot of influences. And then, of course, personal research, books, and never a tireless, you know, never-ending quest for truth and understanding, as you know. Mm.
Now, it's not like the cool thing I like about this movement is there's not like one place to go. That's what I like. There's so many different perspectives, and I try to cover as many of those different perspectives on this show as humanly freaking possible. You know what I'm saying? I don't know about you, but I hate monotony. I hate hearing the same guests, the same hosts. All the time in the same mood. It just drives me nuts.
Yeah. And everybody else has something different to offer. So combined, we really create an unstoppable force when we align and, you know, collaborate and talk to each other, because everybody has information they can share.
Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of your own personal understandings, what are some of these things that have actually kind of really hit you about being in the truth movement and actually starting to meet all these truthers and people and actually becoming one of us instead of just one of the audience?
Right. Well, for me, and I'm sure speaking for Kevin also, it shows that we're on the right track. I mean, it shows that we're doing the right thing, because, I mean, one of the greatest gifts we've received as a result of forming Joy Camp are the people. We've been introduced to so many different people. It's just it's like instant confirmation and gratification, and in knowing that we're on the right track, because we are now involved with all these amazing, brilliant people.
Yeah, it was cool when we started doing this and we really went full steam with it, to send our work to people that we had been getting research from and following for years, and to see them share it on their Facebook pages and post it to their websites is a very proud, satisfying feeling to have, because you think, wow, I've admired you for years. I wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing without you. And in turn, you're telling me how much you've enjoyed what I've done and the fruits of our labors. And it becomes this mutual respect. And it's all really boils down to the passion of seeking truth and turning that into a creative way to share with people.
Mm-hmm. And building community online.
It becomes a bit of a snowball effect after a while. You even noticed that?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it's really nice to know that there's so many other people out there who are as passionate as we are and as dedicated to, you know, winning as we are.
Winning.
Winning. I actually met Charlie Sheen a few weeks ago, randomly.
You met Charlie Sheen a few weeks ago.
I did. I wanted to talk to him so bad about what happened, why he went from being a 9/11 truther to being some crazy guy on television, but it wasn't appropriate.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know. I would have done it.
Yeah, then, I was auditioning for his show, so I had to be careful. Maybe they would have gotten me though. Who knows?
Yeah, yeah, well. I was born without a sense of shame, so, you know. Yeah,
fair enough, fair enough.
I could have done it. But, you know, sometimes it is that kind of that respectful thing, like, you know, I don't want to actually bother this person. You know, they've got their own life, they've got their own thing going on, and, you know, who am I to come up in them? I don't know them from a bar of soap, and, you know, a million other people could have seen them on TV and seen the same thing, and if they all came up to him and bothered him, it'd drive him nuts, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I just didn't want to, you know, it wasn't the right time or place. I mean, if I had, if it was a more intimate setting or if I was at a party or something, but it was at an audition and he was just walking through and I said hi, but I just couldn't bring myself to get too in depth with him.
Well, I don't know. Maybe the time will come.
Yeah, maybe so. Hopefully. That'd be amazing. I am really curious to know what happened there because he was on our side for a long time.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah. Well, I think the same thing happened to him that happened to Tila Tequila, happened to all of these other Hollywood celebrities that really come out and fully try and expose a new world order. Same thing that happened to Randy Quaid. Well, basically, they get an offer they can't refuse. And that's the sad truth of it, you know. Hollywood's run by a bunch of ruthless criminals, psychopathic, murdering pedophile scum. And if you start exposing the Illuminati, they'll come and get you. They'll destroy your career. They'll may have attempts on your life and so on and so forth. It's not a pleasant state of being. And so you just decide, you know what? Being alive is a hell of a lot better than telling the truth. We'll be right back after the break at the VinnieExtraShow.com.
I got some so-called friends. I'll smile right to my face. All when my back is turned. They like to bury me without a trace. Oh, no, no. Oh, no, no. There's only one thing I need to know. Who's that? Are you on?
Welcome back. I'm flying a jet. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. I've got Joy Camp with me. And, we were talking over the break about the homeless problem in Los Angeles and indeed around America. Could you guys share a little bit about that?
Yeah, what we were just saying was, there's really no exact total. There's no one really wants to address it, but I think that lowest possible estimates, and I apologize if I'm inaccurate on this, is 32 million homeless people in America right now. 32 million and counting, obviously, every day. So yeah.
A lot of them in Los Angeles, that's for sure.
Yeah.
We had a homeless guy. Well, he had a van for a while before they took it away. But he was living outside of our apartment on our street for months. And they came and took his van away because it broke down. He was with his wife and a bunch of dogs. And they came and took it away from him when it wouldn't move anymore. And then they pitched up a tent. It was actually very ironic. I don't know if that's the right word, but he pitched a tent with his wife on the lawn of a church, which is right across the street from us. And he was there for maybe a couple more days before they finally swooped him up, and he was gone for a while after that, which is just interesting because it's, you know, a homeless man on the lawn of a church. Something very interesting about that imagery.
Well, and furthermore, you see homeless people out here in LA, and I'm sure all over, that are so skinny. I mean, they look like, you know, Holocaust victims. They are skin and bones, and people just look the other way. They just don't even pay attention. They just keep on walking.
And apparently a quarter of the homeless are veterans.
Right.
Yeah, well, the ones that aren't killing themselves.
Yeah, exactly. The ones that aren't committing suicide.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's one of the other epidemic. Okay. There's quite a few epidemics running in America right now simultaneously. Have you noticed? There's an epidemic of stupidity, an epidemic of scumbaggery, an epidemic of homelessness, an epidemic of cancer, an epidemic of foreign wars, an epidemic of taxes, an epidemic of suicide.
And language reduction.
Oh, yeah. Lol.
Lol.
Ignorance.
Exactly.
Don't forget that.
LMAO.
What I don't get is when people actually say the word lol in person instead of actually laughing.
Right. Welcome to
1954. What the frick is that about, man?
You know.
Are you freaking kidding me? It's like, dude.
Thank you, Twitter.
George Orwell, we made it.
Yeah, we did it.
We did it, Orwell.
Prophecy fulfilled.
We're here.
Well, I think it was something that Einstein said. He said that when technology passes people's understanding of it, we will truly have a nation of idiots.
Yep.
Voila.
Pretty much.
Exactly.
There you go. But yes, a lot of epidemics. Long story short. Countless.
Now, is that what the what is there like a science or something where you study epidemics? Is it called epidemiology?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, should be. We'll coin it.
Epidemicology.
We'll start an online class.
No. It sounds more like a religion, doesn't it? You know, like maybe we could recruit Tom Cruise and John Travolta into their epidemiology.
Yeah. Can we charge money for it?
Yeah, we got to capitalize.
Well, you've got to charge money for it, bro. How could you even ask a question that?
I don't do anything unless there's money involved.
Yeah.
We're getting paid for this interview.
That's
right?
The source of all of my motivation in life.
Yeah, the almighty dollar.
It's that powerful piece of paper.
Yeah. $50, bro. $50. That's all I need. And also, incidentally, what I find very interesting about money is that people actually think that their career is a means to an end. But what they don't get is that if they're working, all their money disappears into the pockets of the bankers. And so what the hell is the point in working for something that you can't accumulate because the bankers steal it from you?
Absolutely. Well, that is the primary reason why people are unwilling to ask bigger questions, I think, because they don't want to feel like their career and everything they're working towards means nothing. Once they start questioning reality, they start questioning their own lives, and they don't want to think that all that they're working towards is ultimately unimportant or irrelevant.
Did you guys suffer that massive depression / anger stage when you first wake up and you realize everything is BS?
Absolutely, man. Yeah, of course. Yeah, it was. I was in graduate school for the most part during all this, so I was really distracted by my classes and my schooling. But yeah, it was a very isolating experience. I mean, it was. I didn't really have many people to talk to, and I would get into a lot of fights also because I was so passionate about the information I was learning. I wanted to tell people, and then I would be communicating from an emotional place, they'd be reacting from an emotional place, and we weren't getting anywhere. And if anything, I was distancing myself even further from them as a result. So yeah, definitely went through that angry phase. I had to figure out how to communicate.
It took almost 10 years really to figure out how to communicate the at least an effective way that we've been doing now, because we did spend a lot of time, you know, we tried the street corners and the bullhorns and the signs and the MySpace pages
and arguments
and the arguments, vicious arguments with friends and family and, you know, fathers and to no effect, really, to no end. It was just a repetitive circle. They had their perspective and we had ours, and there was no commonality between the two. There was no common ground between the two. And it took many, many years to figure out that there is effective ways to communicate with people, and our talent and our skill lies in comedy. And we realize that the power of comedy, how you can communicate messages with people. I tell the story all the time about my dad and not being able to communicate with him about worldly issues. He's a very proud liberal. I grew up in a very proud liberal family, surrounded by very proud conservatives, you know, aunts, uncles, grandparents, all that. So I kind of got both sides of that pyramid spectrum, right? The left and the right.
Have you ever noticed that if you tell the truth, you offend both sides of every argument?
Yes.
Because both sides are very rarely telling the truth?
Yes. And you ever also noticed how both sides of their arguments are always rooted in the foundation that your side is screwing me? Always. This is what happens when your side is in power, is I lose this, lose that, lose this. And then it's the same argument the other side just replace whatever candidates are running for president.
And they fail to realize that all that's happening is they're arguing with their neighbors. They're arguing with the guy across the street and getting mad at their peers rather than actually looking up top and seeing and noticing or actually paying attention to the fact that nothing really changes no matter who, you know, who the president is, Republican, Democrat. I mean, look at the truth seekers – or whatever you want to call them, during Bush's administration, we were called radical liberals, radical left. And now in Obama's administration, we're called radical right. I mean, it just flips back and forth.
Well, the thing is, our message hasn't changed, just the labels people put on us changes.
Of course.
Exactly. Yeah. Conspiracy theorist. Yeah. That's our favorite, right?
I love that. And in fact, I actually wear that as a badge of honor. I'm a proud conspiracy theorist, because my definition of a conspiracy theorist is somebody who believes that powerful people who have a lot of influence actually use their power to maintain or grow their influence.
True that.
Wow, I like that. It's good. Well done.
And if you're not a conspiracy theorist, then you're a coincidence theorist.
Right.
And you think that everything happens by accident. There's no such thing as lies. There's no such thing as scumbaggery. There's no such thing as backroom deals. There's no such thing as bribery. It doesn't exist. And everything just happens by sheer coincidence.
Right. And then they come back at you and say something like, well, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Oh, why don't you leave?
Oh, that's my favorite. If you don't love it, leave it.
Or things have always been this way. That's my favorite.
Yeah, you think too much.
Oh, yeah, I love the one. But we only just are hearing about this now because of our new scientific breakthroughs and things like this. It's actually always been there, you know, like the cancer excuse, you know. Right. Like 1 in 2 or 1 in 3 people are getting cancer now, and they're saying, oh, everybody used to get cancer back in the day. It's just we didn't detect it before. It's like, no, 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 you freaking you don't even have the evidence to back up your own argument. Just shush.
Yeah, read a book.
Read a book. Watch a documentary. In fact,
subscribe to Joy Camp.
Yeah, even better.
Yeah.
And also, how exactly are you guys planning to make money off your thing? Because, you know, are people donating? Can people go to you? Have you got a website? Well,
we've had a couple of donations, which is very flattering. And hopefully we'll be able to grow more to where that, you know, we'll find ourselves in a situation like what you're doing, where you said that the donators are sort of funding what you do to keep moving forward. And we operate off of nothing over here. You know, we really do. We stretch a really long way.
And well, you have to in this movement.
You do. Because obviously
the bankers take the rest.
Yeah, exactly. That's true.
Well, we're also currently a finalist in the Alex Jones Operation Paul Revere film contest, and the grand prize is $100,000. We're not holding our breath, but, you know, any kind of situation like that we can get ourselves in is beneficial. And, you know, we're trying to figure it out any way possible.
Yeah, exactly. And we realize that we may be faced with challenges when it comes to money and the business side of things, but we're ready to take those head on. And whatever it takes to, you know, to make this thing full time all the time is what we all want. Ultimately is the end game for us.
And have you heard of George Heminger, Survive and Thrive TV? He's in your area.
George Heminger? No, I never heard that name. So. I'm gonna write that down.
Yeah. I can put you in touch with him. He's good friends with my former producer, Mitch, who's now also in LA, and I'll hook you up with them as well.
Yeah,
he's producing the Hagman and Hagman Report at the moment, one of Blog Talk Radio's most popular shows, I think, on iTunes. You really do have to link up with people, and particularly in your area. And that's what I found out when I first started off is I'll go to protests and things like this, and it was mostly just commies who go to protests. And they're all against. It's funny. They're against the establishment, but at the same time, they're against conspiracy theorists.
How
does that work? Because if you're against conspiracy theorists, it means you're pro-establishment at some point.
Right. Conspiracy theorists. People who ask questions. Conspiracy theorists.
Yeah. Well, people who demand answers are conspiracy theorists, you know. Any douchebag can ask questions, but it takes a conspiracy theorist to actually really want the answers.
That's true. Good point.
Even though those answers are really enraging, really depressing, mean that you lose most of your friends, mean that your family ridicules you, means that you can't work anymore because you become employophobic, and so on and so forth. There are huge amounts of consequences to this.
Right, and also the information never stops. And once you decide to be an open mind and you go down, for lack of a better term, the rabbit hole, it doesn't end. Like, it just keeps going. I mean, it'll take you back 40,000 years into the past trying to figure out this stuff. So it is it's a large task to take on, a large burden in a way to take on. But liberating at the same time, very important point to stress. It's liberating to pull that plug out of your brain.
Yeah, all those things that we just said and listed are heavy and they're hard to deal with, but it makes you stronger as a person every single day that you learn truth about something. And it makes your life better in turn, I think, as a whole. Some days can be depressing, but as a whole, man, your life will get better. I really believe that.
And you know what? Ignorance is not bliss. That's the big misconception. You know, I would never in a million years change to go back the way I was before now, because ignorance means you take antidepressants. Ignorance means you are a cog in the system, that you are walking around aimlessly, not knowing what your purpose is in life. I would rather take being, you know, awake and have a challenging road ahead than being ignorant and being unhappy.
My philosophy is if you don't suffer because of learning something, then you haven't really learned anything.
Right.
Yeah.
Or more to the point, you haven't learned anything really important.
Yeah.
Most people will tell you that when they go through something hard in life, they are better as a person as a result of it. Or you'll hear things like, I wouldn't be where I'm at today had I not gone through that. And that fits right in line with taking the leap, you know, and to realizing that pretty much everything you've been taught your whole life is a complete lie. And now you want to take that giant leap that there's no turning back from to investigating who you are, where you come from, and why things are the way they are. And I feel like if you're a soul on this planet, it's your responsibility to do that. I mean, how could you spend an entire lifetime and never question who you are and where you come from and why you're here? I mean, really, like really deep down, look at it and think of it. How could you waste a life and do that? I couldn't.
And it doesn't take a genius to look around and see that everything is pretty messed up. I mean, this is a pretty backwards arrangement we have set up around us. I mean, it doesn't take too much critical thinking, just a little tiny bit of critical thinking to notice that everything is backwards and we are slaves to this system. It doesn't take much thought to figure that out.
And on that point, I think most people know that deep down. I really do. I think there's a lot of people out there that are going to refuse to listen to it no matter what. And you know what? Fine. Let them do that. That's their own choice, their own life, their own perspective. Forget about them. But most people out there in this, you know, 99%, you got the conspiracy theorists on one end and you got the predators controlling the world on the other. And then you got a big group of people right in the middle being manipulated. Those people, most of them, they know that there's something wrong. And to go back to our earlier point about how angry and frustrating it can be when you go through this, because you see how blind people are to what's going on. And all you want to do is help them and say, no, just look at the truth. Just see it. Please. I'm doing this to help you, not just me. And it's frustrating.
I want to help you, slave.
Yeah, exactly. Pick up, sheep. Come on. Live your life, man. So, you know, to that point.
Wake up, scum. All right.
Okay. I've learned that planting a seed for those people is much, much more effective than screaming at them. You know, I'll do that in my own apartment. Wake up, sheep. But in their face, you crack a joke or you say something, you plant a seed in their head, and you'll see that light bulb go off.
All right, we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, as the ad break goes off. Back in a minute. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chain nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, which is good for the economy because now everybody can get a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb, according to the Prime Minister, who used to work on Wall Street at the Federal Reserve in New York, and in charge of European bond and derivatives trade. How does this political game work? I don't. It is just like, are you a banker? Yes. Are you a scumbag? Yeah. Do you lie all the time? Yeah. You're in.
You're in. We like you. Here's the money.
You're our new CEO.
Here's more money.
Yeah.
He's got the right stuff.
Yeah. Do you have any empathy? No. Perfect. You're in.
Hey, and in fact, did you guys, you were actually in America during the 2008 frickin' presidential campaign. I was all the frack way over in New Zealand. And when it was over, even I had to drink tequila on air to get to like try and, you know, just, woosa, get that shitty white Muslim out of my system. Oh, God. Mm-hmm, oh, God. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a sad day. I everyone around me was really excited on election day, and I just had a sinking feeling. I felt so unhappy, and everybody was getting mad at me. They're like, "Oh, come on, Benny, just cheer up, enjoy it." I'm like, "Yeah, really happy.
Change is coming, guys.
Cheer up. Talk about pushing Shiite Muslim uphill, man."
It was so, and it wasn't like I wanted. What's his? Who ran against him? Oh, McCain. I wasn't happy. I wouldn't want him, but I was just so upset. It was just a sad day.
Yeah. See, in New Zealand, McCain is a brand of frozen vegetables. Ah, McCain, you've done it again. And I found very strange about the elections was that people actually believed both sides, right? They actually believed that McCain was who he said he is, that Obama was who he said he is. And it just, it was so infuriating to see the lies on both sides being believed by everybody and then believing that they've, they're actually making a choice based upon a reasonable analysis of the situation when it's 99.99999% lies. I mean, what's his name? Is his name even true? Is it Barry Satoru, Barack H. O'Barry, Obama? What the hell is his actual name? Is that even true? Is that? I mean, come on.
I'm pretty sure his moniker is Big Brother. Pretty sure. I think he's the face of Big Brother. I've come to believe.
Mm-hmm. This is Big Bro taking over the show. And I've got this feeling, Ryan, that the people of the United States have just had enough. You ever get that feeling?
On some days.
Yeah, not as much as I'd like, but I hope so. That's the goal.
And then you see videos like Mark Dice going around asking people these questions and calling them zombies and so on and so forth. And I was wondering, you know, is he doing that for a reason, or is he just frustrated that people are stupid enough that they don't know what's going on, and he's just going out there out of frustration, like the sort of renewed anger and frustration that we all felt when we first woke up, and he seems to have not gotten over it, and he blames it. It's a funny thing. It is a poor shepherd that blames his flock, and I think that's the problem with a lot of us in this movement, is that we blame the sheep for what the shepherd is telling them to do.
Well, see, you've obviously had Max Egan on your show many times, because that's kind of his philosophy is what I usually default to. It's very easy to yell sheep and to yell slave, and maybe sometimes in your own bedroom with your own friends that are aware, it's healthy to get it out of you. But at the end of the day, Max Egan always says it best, you know, there's billions of people on this planet and billions of perspectives on this planet, and everybody's got their own at the end of the day. And you can scream and call them sheep as much as you want, but how effective are you really being when it's done? Because ultimately, we need those sheep. We need those slaves if we ever want to get out of this prison that we're in. So I feel like it's much more beneficial for your own personal health and for the health of the community and the movement to realize, to extend a hand rather than to shout slave.
I do think that's correct, and I found it actually makes you feel better to help people rather than run people down.
Yeah.
And people, isn't it a simple lesson that most people have not learned yet?
Yep.
And people sway with the wind. I mean, people do like to be led, I think. I mean, that's what it seems like anyway. And I think that, you know, enough people on our side of the equation can influence the masses. We don't need every single person to, quote unquote, wake up. We just need to sway them over to our team to get them to see that, you know, we are on their side and that the people who are governing their lives are not. And then the masses will sway, I think.
Well, how many people actually fought in the American Revolution? 3% of the population, and they overthrew the most powerful military in the face of the earth?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then people say, oh, we need the masses to awaken. You don't need the masses.
Exactly.
The masses have never, ever made one iota of difference. The masses follow whatever leader you put in front of them, regardless of whether or not that leader leads them to greener pastures or a frickin' slaughterhouse. They don't matter. They don't make any changes themselves.
Yeah.
Very true.
It's always the small determined minority that make the difference. And this is what I've come to believe. And this is actually what gives me hope, that although I'm outnumbered by moronic slave scum, I can make a huge difference, because none of them are actually trying to make a difference. I am. And by the mere fact that I'm the one trying to make a difference, strangely enough, I will be the one to make the difference.
Absolutely. I remember once a long time ago, towards the beginning of my awakening, someone put it into perspective really well on some video I was watching. They said, if you really break it down, there's a few hundred, maybe a few thousand people who are really running the show at the top of the pyramid. Therefore, theoretically, all you'd need is a few hundred or a few thousand people to topple them, to be the solution to those people. That's all you need. It doesn't take everybody. It just takes the right, the right situation and the right minds aligning, and the populace will sway. They'll come back. Because people are good. I think generally, even though they are cheap or controlled or whatever, in their hearts, people are good. People are compassionate. People are empathetic. People want to help. And if we can just wake that up in them and bring them over to our side, we'll win. We'll win. Respect ourselves and respect each other. That would defeat the whole picture, the whole game.
I do think this is a very important realization. It's like Carol Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, is that, and what I take away from that, I haven't read the book, of course, what I take away from just the phrase, tragedy and hope, is that's America. That's America in a nutshell, isn't it? It's a tragedy.
Yep.
That's such a beacon of freedom, creativity, entrepreneurial spirit, tax-free status, has now become one of the worst police states on earth. Full of obesity and stupidity and scumbaggery. And yet, despite that, despite the overarching masses of problems that it's got, there is still hope. And while hope survives, hope springs eternal. There is nothing that you can do to extinguish that.
Absolutely. Yeah. The will to live, the will to know. We are born curious. We are born with imaginations. We want to create reality. We want to contribute. And that's what gets stifled by the system. But that's all inside of us when we're born.
Mm. Well, it's all BS. You know, every time they try to tell you, you can't make a difference, that's BS. Every time they try to tell you, hey, the masses will never wake up, that's BS. Every time, everything that they tell you to discourage you from doing the right thing by your people, by your nation, by the world, is BS. And it's once you realize that, oh my God, they're just liars. And it's the thing, because I've encountered a number of liars in my time, and at first you try to give them the benefit of the doubt, and they go, oh, maybe he just didn't mean it like that or something like that. And then eventually you start to get it. You know what? I can't trust a single fracking word that comes out of this guy's mouth. If he told me the sky was blue, I would have to look outside just to check.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's the mainstream media. That's the president. That's every single control structure. In fact, if it's part of an institution, this is my philosophy. If it's part of an institution and it has a stated goal or aim, it's basically the direct opposite of whatever that stated goal or aim is.
Absolutely. Doublespeak, right? That's 1984. Mm. 2 + 3 + 3, or
How do you feel about that?
I feel great, man. I just love it. I'm just swimming in admiration, and I'm just so comfortable. I love this system so much. We it's a really frustrating situation we're in, and that's why we do what we do. I mean, we're trying to make, like we said earlier, unfunny situations, like the unfunniest topics out there, lighthearted, because we're showing that you can laugh at this stuff. And once you laugh at it, you are breaking down your own defense towards it. And it's easier to understand. It's easier to grasp. It's easier to take on and know what to do with it, even though it is daunting and intimidating and scary. You can just laugh, and then it's accessible. And then you can see that these scumbags who are threatening your very existence are just people. They're just people. They're frack heads, and you can overthrow them. They're just power hungry, greedy frackers.
Frackers.
Yeah.
Frackers with cheese.
Yeah.
And I think this is also another very important point as well, is just realizing who you're dealing with. You know, they're not gods. They think they are, but they're not.
No,
they bleed and they feel just like anybody else, apart from the psychopathic ones who actually have no emotions. And there's really little you can do to offend them. They're just all full of rage, hate, deception and just infinite scumbaggery. And people make the mistake of thinking that you're dealing with somebody who's like a normal human being. They're not normal human beings, man. There's something deeply freaking wrong with them.
Absolutely.
We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Is there something wrong with me? We'll be right back. And welcome back. Welcome back to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go frickin' nuts. And my very special guest, the infamous and the hilarious Joy Camp crew. Welcome back, guys.
Thanks.
Whew. Glad to be here.
I love lighter side of genocide. I might use that at some point.
Go for your life, man. Everybody else steals my ideas. Why should you be any different?
I'll give you credit.
Yeah. Give me creds instead of creating an entire network based upon my ideas and stealing it and then using your platform to insult me and abuse me every single day and have all your trolls in the chat rooms and stuff.
Okay. Hey, tell us how you really feel.
That's what I'm dealing with right now, yo.
Fair enough.
Hey, but look at it this way. If your ideas are good enough to steal, they must be a pretty freaking good idea, huh?
Yeah. They should be.
What is that? Plagiary is the sincerest form of flattery? I just totally screwed up that quote, but something like that. Or something is the sincerest form of flattery?
Imitation.
Imitation, not plagiarism. Imitation, is that right?
Yeah. Imitation is a form of flattery. Stealing somebody's ideas and masquerading it as your own is a form of scumbaggery.
Yes. That's exactly how it goes.
Thank you for clearing that up.
Yeah. I'm good with the definitions, aren't I?
That was one of my definitions, right? You took that?
Yeah, well, scumbaggery.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a great word, and it connotes something really heinous whilst at the same time being rather amusing, you know? Like Henry Kissinger.
Amusing.
Oh, the wonderful Henry Kissinger.
Where did he get that voice from? Did he borrow it from Satan or something like
that? No, I think it's from eating babies.
I'm pretty sure he's not. It's because he's not a human being. I think.
Yeah, that's what a reptile sounds like after they've eaten a baby.
Yes. I like the baby flesh. Especially when they wriggle while I'm trying to eat the body still alive with my forked tongue.
He got a really scary voice. Like I don't get... Have you noticed that some things... Like, there's an old saying that, not everything is as it appears. Some things are exactly as they appear, okay? Have you seen a picture of David Rockefeller? Oh my God.
Yeah, well, years of eating human flesh can do that to a person.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look at the queen. Yeah, God, Jesus Christ, it's scary. Well, you ever see the picture of the queen holding a silenced pistol while she's driving a car?
Oh yeah, she's hot.
Nothing like a woman with a weapon.
Yeah, she's cold blooded. Just my type.
Oh yeah, cold blooded with a pistol.
That's why they call her Lizzie.
Exactly.
Hey, they just had a baby, right? There was a baby alien just born. Recently, right?
I don't want to.
Oh, yeah. Everybody apparently, knows. They heard demon howls and a rattling of chains from within the birthing room.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the lizard, I think, is now on the planet. Brand new.
The Antichrist is born, my lord. Get the groomer of the stool, pronto!
Exactly.
Somebody's
got to
wipe
their butts, right? Say what?
Somebody's got to wipe their butts.
Yeah, it's true. Well, I don't get that. And in fact, my friend Freighter X, he was used to live in. You know where Jekyll Island is, right, off of New York, and there's beach communities like that all over the place where they've got these massive frickin' mansions right on the beaches and things like that, and people only come there like a month or so out of the year. And he used to live there as a beach bum kind of thing. You know, I remember he was telling me this one time he was sleeping in a gas station bathroom for a period of time. And when these rich kids would come in and they'd have daddy's credit card and things like that, and they'd be able to, you know, they'd want to go out and do things. So they had these motocross tracks, and they'd go out and they'd do little jumps with their old bikes and things like that. And these kids would swarm in and buy these brand new bikes with all these beautiful pads and things like that, just straight off the bat. And they'd shout everybody drinks and things like that at their big mansions that daddy paid for and what have you. They'd be driving around in limousines. And they could barely even tie their own shoelaces. They couldn't make toast. They couldn't drive properly. And that's the thing, man. When everything is handed to you, everything that you you have as part of your body or your mind or your soul gets so weak that you become almost defenseless without everybody doing everything for you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, well, they're also
all the people that control our society.
Yeah, they're also cousins, and inbreeding does not help.
And imagine if you took those people out of their situation, you got rid of their bodyguards and their security and their uniforms and take everything away from them that protects them. They're just these weak, pathetic people, maybe part people.
Helpless, like you said.
Helpless. And they're nothing. They're pathetic is the best word that I can think of for these people. They are just absolutely pathetic. So that's a good way and a good perspective to look at them, is without everything that's surrounding them and protecting them, they're nothing. And that we can certainly be. So let's do it already, you know? What are we waiting for?
Well, you know, and this is the difference between the elite and people like us. People like us, we've got practically nothing. And we're fine. We're everything with nothing. And people like them, they're nothing if they don't have everything.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's like what I was saying earlier. I mean, I'm now an awake human being who is still learning, but I'm awake. And I couldn't be more at ease and at peace and centered and grounded in my life. I really enjoy my life in spite of all the BS. I mean, I'm a very contented human being, and I'm looking forward to, you know, the rest of my life, because I am awake.
Well, it takes a while to deprogram, isn't it? I mean, how long did it take us to be programmed into the system? 20-odd years or something like that before you start to kind of get the information sort of drip-feeding in it for first. Then it comes in a flood, and then it goes back to a nice flow, right?
Yep.
And eventually, all of the programming and all of the BS that we've been indoctrinated with will eventually come undone and go away. And I still think, to a large degree, I'm a little bit programmed, as we all are. You know, it's very difficult to deprogram from absolutely everything, to stop using everything that the system's given us. And you know, to be honest, I like the conveniences that the system has allowed me. You know, I do like it if it's like midnight or something, and I'm out at a club having a few drinks with a few mates or whatever, and cutting a rug, and then want to go get some food and be able to, you know, get a kebab at 2 o'clock in the morning. These kind of conveniences, I think, are absolutely fantastic. You know, this is great. But on the other hand, if you didn't have them, it wouldn't really matter all that much, because you wouldn't miss it if you didn't have it. Kind of like kids in the 50s didn't miss PlayStations because it was called a backyard. That was your PlayStation.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where the key thing of balance comes into play, because if you can find the right balance between the convenience of the system at hand and what you really need and don't need between that, then you can live a really good life, you know, seeking the truth. And, you know, if you have to work the job or do what you have to do to get by and survive, you can live a really good, balanced life. I just got back from 4 days in the mountains with no computer, no phone, you know, no nothing. And, man, I stare at a computer screen 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, you know, usually. So for me, that was it was very soothing to my brain to do that. And, you know, and then I get back home and, of course, I dive right back into it. But I think you need that balance, you know, so you don't got to feel bad about having your kebab at 2 o'clock in the morning and enjoying the convenience of this screwed up system that we're in. But you do got to find balance if you want to live a happy life, I think, for me anyway.
Well, getting away from technology and computers, like I think I really only take about kind of two breaks a year. One for a couple of weeks in the middle of the year. I just kind of came back from that a couple of weeks ago. And one at the end of the year around Christmas. And during my breaks, I will genuinely make a concerted effort to not help anybody. You know, this is my time, okay? Anybody wants requests of me on Facebook, I ain't going to know about it because I ain't going on my Facebook. Anybody wants me to answer an email or urgently turn up to film a protest, I ain't doing it because I ain't checking those emails. You know what I'm saying? Yep. You got to defracking tatch. And it gives you perspective as well. And that's another thing that I like about hosting the show is because they have so many different people on every single day, you gain something that you don't with other radio shows, perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
And we're lucky in two regards. One, we're lucky that we do have the internet because it unifies us. But second, we're lucky that we were the last generation that didn't have the internet. I mean, we grew up without computers. I mean, I had, right. You know, like really big, clumsy computers that I'd work on maybe for, you know, to learn how to touch type in second grade or something. But other than that, I mean, my childhood was spent outside. I didn't have to go on the internet to find entertainment. I mean, I was an active child who loved being outside with my friends. I mean, I didn't have... I'm glad that we got to experience that.
Yeah, very, very glad, because the kids of this generation are much, much different. And there is still hope in them, I think. I hope, you know, but it's... I couldn't trade having a childhood being surrounded by kids in the suburbs, playing in the desert and riding my bike and building forts for staring at a computer screen playing a video game. You know, I wouldn't trade that forever. So we're a very lucky generation, you know, the three of us here, to have been able to experience life before the internet, you know, what the internet is today.
Mm-hmm. Well, also we're...
Cell phones.
Well, cell phone, EMF and EMR radiation sources are actually really freaking bad for you.
Oh, yeah.
And if you guys ever get the time, you know, go into my YouTube channel and search EMF or EMR, and you watch the presentations of Paul Waddell. I had him on the show, as well as film a presentation that he did at an Organics Expo. And you know that feeling that you get when you first become a truther, when you start to learn 9/11 was an inside job, that there's a genocide agenda, that vaccines are bad for you, that kind of thing, and you start to feel freaked out, somebody's trying to kill you, and you haven't had that sensation in quite a number of years because you've just gotten used to it. Oh, yeah, another person's trying to kill me, another thing's trying to kill me, so on and so forth. You know, you get used to it. And then you watch this presentation, and it comes back all over you again, man, like it's that freaking bad. And as we were talking about earlier, and this is something I find very interesting, my nephews, they're already playing with my brother's iPad. You know, they're already playing iPad games and things like that. So they're from practically as soon as they can touch things and have motor reflex control, they're plugged into these electronic devices that are causing them cancer and getting into their brain pan.
Oh, yeah. And furthermore, have you seen there? I know there's multiple videos, but there's one in particular that I'm thinking about on YouTube of a baby holding a magazine, trying to swipe the screen, basically, or the magazine, trying to swipe the page as if it were an iPad, and getting really frustrated because nothing will swipe when she's trying it. That's happening also. Furthermore, I also read that the earliest case of ADD being diagnosed in a child and being prescribed medicine for that ADD is 9 months old. That's the youngest case of ADD. So kids are being put on this medication for their attention deficit disorder practically from birth, which is a really scary thought.
That's actually, incidentally, another thing that Paul Waddell covered in his interview on the show is he goes around and he checks people's houses for a living, right? He I think it costs like $450 an hour he charges, and well worth it. Because he goes into these houses and these kids have ADD. And he's like, okay, well, let's check their room. Oh, look, there's a massive power cable that's putting off a huge amount of electromagnetic radiation right next to their head all night long when they sleep, so they can't sleep properly. And then you wonder why they don't have the ability to have a decent concentration and things like that. It's because they're being radiated and poisoned, bro. And so He puts in a couple of changes to their rooms, insulates the cable and things like that. Symptoms go away. How magical is that? Or we could give the child cocaine.
Yeah.
I vote for the cocaine.
Yeah, and no. Meanwhile, they're watching television, and they're exposed to something like 40,000 commercials by the time they're 3 years old or something. So they're just getting this rapid-fire just programming in their brains. I mean, no wonder they can't think for themselves. Well, no wonder they can't concentrate, especially in a schooling system, which is brainwashing in itself. I mean, these kids, they show extra energy, or they show this inability to focus when they're really just not fitting in with the system. They're just their energy is not wanting to be there. They don't desire it. They want to be doing something else. They want to be expressing themselves or creating or playing. Instead, they're being brainwashed and taught to be in line and be a sheep and fit into the system and not think for themselves. It's tragic. And then the brainwashing, sorry to not go on for a second, but the brainwashing extends to the teachers as well, because I work at a middle school and I deal with 12, 13, 14-year-old kids, and they are rowdy because they're going through puberty. And the moment a kid shows behavior that is not in line with what they think it should be, the teachers will sit around and discuss the child already as if they have a disorder. They think, he's probably autistic. No, I think he has Asperger's. Oh, no, it's definitely ADD. I think it's ADHD. I mean, this is the way they talk. So the brainwashing is so extensive. And these kids, they don't stand a chance.
Hopefully not. Hopefully some of them will break out of it. Yeah. We need them to.
Well, I think the importance of just giving a frack about somebody and not trying to put them in the box, not trying to pigeonhole them, is something that's lost on a lot of people. Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
People are always trying to label somebody. I love it when people try to label me, because 90%, I think probably about 99% of my beliefs, I also hold counter beliefs based upon whatever context. So if they call me racist because I say something, I can show up about maybe 10 other references of something where I've stood up for suppressed racial groups. Or if they call me ignorant or something, I can come up with a thousand references of things that I know that they don't. So they're the ones who are ignorant, and so on and so forth. If they say that I try to label everything, I can pull up this conversation and say, you know what, everybody's trying to obsess and label anything, and you're trying to label me as somebody who labels people. You know, and this is what I feel is the real joy of life, is that everybody's actually really, really unique. And if you try to pigeonhole them and put them in a box, the only reason why you're trying to do it is not to help them, is to help you make sense of that, because you can't be fracked actually getting to know this person as a person. You can't actually be bothered caring about them, because your life and yourself and your own little box is just too freaking important, isn't it? We'll be right back after the break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. And my very special guest, Joy Camp. And what were we talking about over the break? I thought it was really important.
I was telling you how I would have been, based on the standards of ADD diagnosis these days, I definitely would have been diagnosed with ADD as a student if I was a kid now. Because I was terrible at paying attention in class. I was the worst. I would drift off every day, and I definitely would have been assigned the title of ADD as a child. Thankfully.
You know, it's really ironic, isn't it? We're teaching these kids this really boring stuff that doesn't make any sense, and they drift off. So obviously, that's the kids that have got the problem, not us that are the idiots for teaching them stuff that doesn't make any sense and is really boring.
Yeah,
right. I mean, and the parents are taught to look for problems in their kids. They're taught to look for these symptoms, these signs of disorder, and that's, I mean, it's astonishing. It's scary. It's really scary to see.
Isn't that interesting? How in the process to correct disorders, they're creating chaos.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And they're putting them on medication. They're giving them pills that alter their chemical makeup. I mean, this is, it's so terrifying. I mean, it's, It's out of this world. It's unbelievable that it's happening. But it's on purpose, obviously. They're trying to stifle the generation behind us before they even get started.
Yeah, and they have no choice, you know. They go to these their kids. They have no say in the matter. They just follow what their parents do, and their parents follow what they're told to do. So they're just stuck, and that's why it makes it that much harder for them to break out of this spell. And that's why I think you go through, to go back to the beginning of our show, this phase of frustration and anger, and it's scary and all that, because you've had a lifetime stacked on top of you, year after year, of being conditioned by this BS. And you have to break out of that. You know, as soon as you're awake, you break out of that. And that's why you go through these crazy, this tornado. You know, you get swooped up by a tornado and spit out on a different end.
You know, and to piggyback on that, on a different note with children, okay, when I was a kid, I used to watch MTV a lot. I was a big MTV fan. I'd watch everything that came on MTV. And you watch popular music now and MTV now, it's so riddled with symbolism and subliminal messages. I feel like they're laying it on right. So thick. I mean, granted, looking back on the MTV that I would watch as a kid, you can see it, but it's more subtle. It's like they don't even care anymore. They're not even trying because they know they can get away with it. They're affecting these kids on a vibrational level too, and subconsciously. And it's in your face. And we can watch, let's say, a Rihanna or a Jay-Z music video and be like, oh yeah, there's Illuminati symbolism. But the kids don't realize that. And that's the target. So they don't care if we see it, but the kids are getting it. They're the ones who are receiving all this information subliminally. And that's scary to see, because that was not like that when we were kids.
Mm. And there was another point that you made that I found very interesting, Benny, is that you're an art teacher and you don't even have a proper classroom. You just go, you're going to whatever thing, and it's an elective as well. And I recall a movie called Mr. Holland's Opus, and there was a conversation between Mr. Holland and the principal, and the principal was saying, oh, we need to cut the music budget because when it comes to a choice between reading, writing, and arithmetic, I'll choose the reading, writing, and arithmetic over the art. And Mr. Holland says words to the effect, you know what, you can do that all you want, but eventually the kids won't have anything to read or write about.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and the sad thing about my situation or the arts education in my school is that they're lucky that they actually have arts. I mean, most schools don't even have it as an elective, and they actually get it. Granted, they don't have a classroom, which is completely backwards, but at least they have it. And it's sad that we even have to say it like that. I mean, it should be, and I feel like it was more of a requirement when I was a kid. I remember I took a band class and I took a singing class. And this was a part of my public schooling, and now it's an elective. Now you're lucky if you get arts in your education as a kid.
So it's interesting, you know, you pull back a little further from that and you ask the question, well, what does that all mean? Why is it that kids are programmed with meaningless and irrelevant facts and lies made up of history and science and math, et cetera. And yet art, you know, like he said, Benny said, it's lucky if they can even have that as an elective. And if they do, they don't even have a classroom to where they can express their art in it. So it makes you wonder why is art so, for lack of a better word, forbidden in public schooling systems? These are the systems created by these powers that be, and they don't want kids learning art. So what does it tell you about them and their fear of art? It shows, and it's proof of how powerful art is. Art, when someone is artistic and creative and they're good at it, and they employ some type of truth within their art, don't you just immediately gain respect for that person? When you see somebody conveying truth and getting people to think while being creative at the same time, you know, I get a little drool down the side of my mouth and I see that. And I think, wow, this guy is cool. I want to know who this guy is. So it's proof right there, proof in the pudding, you know, that art is a really, really powerful tool. And if they're not teaching it at public schools, then these kids need to be doing it outside of the public schools.
I would take one step further and refer to it as creativity and not just art, just creativity in general. It's creativity that they're stifling.
Yeah, yeah. It's not just painting a picture and writing a song. It's everything combined. Whatever you personally are talented at and have the passion and drive to do, it's all art and it's all creativity and it's all positive. So if you're a truth seeker and you are also creative, the day you decide to combine those two efforts into one is going to change your life forever.
and might change everybody else's at the same time. And and what's interesting is, as you were saying that, I recall the psychopath roundtable that we had with Thomas Sheridan, Jay Widener, and James Corbett. We had those three amazing guests all at the same time. And one of the things Thomas Sheridan said, we were talking about careers that psychopaths are likely to be in, and it's power and control structures, you know, like police, lawyers, doctors, politicians, media moguls, that kind of thing. Oh, my God, I'm a media mogul. And they also had a list of places where they're not likely to be, where almost none of them are. Artists and childhood teachers, right? Yep. And then all of a sudden, all the agenda that gets laid bare. No wonder they ain't teaching frickin' art in schools, eh? You know, they don't want all of these kids who aren't psychopaths or psychopaths in waiting to have any experience of something that'll prevent them from becoming scumbags. Mm-hmm. Maybe. Yep.
Yeah,
it's just a theory of mine.
They don't want us thinking for ourselves. I mean, it's pretty easy to see that they don't want independent thought. They want to produce just workers, worker bees, and that's pretty obvious. I think they.
You know what's hilarious? New Zealand's parliament building is called the Beehive, and it literally looks like a beehive. And I was just thinking about this. Well, hold on a second. A beehive is controlled by one that is born to rule. And everybody else in the beehive has to obey orders. And if they ever protect themselves or even protect the system, they die as a result.
Yep.
And I'm like, well, that's a really powerful metaphor. Who built the beehive? Well, it turns out that it was actually a high-level New Zealand Freemason. Who was having a conversation with another high-level Freemason who was incidentally the Prime Minister of New Zealand at the time. And in fact, at the time, it was extremely rare and unlikely that you would ever become the Prime Minister if you weren't a Freemason. You know, just, whoa.
The beehive is a popular symbol, too. I mean, that's a really popular symbol. It's on a lot of coat of arms and stuff. Isn't it on, like, the Mormon coat of arms or... Is these coat of arms using the right term? I know that it's a very popular symbol.
Mm. Well, in either case, what it appears like to me is that all of our control structures, like good, decent people like you and me, we don't like having control over people, do we? We actually like having our independence. We like having control over our own selves. We like contributing and giving to other people rather than telling other people what to do and forcing them into it. Yep. You know why? Because we're good, decent people. That's why we people like us very rarely go into politics. That's why we very rarely become huge, massive CEOs with inordinate quantities of power. And incidentally, that's why the entire country is in the world itself is run by a bunch of freaking psychos. You know, it's really sad, isn't it? Because people like us don't want to run for politics and get a position of absolute power and domination where we can drone strike people with a little red button and have no apps and have no moral conscience about it, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, trying to be a part of the system that way, you really can't change it. You can't change. I don't think you can be a politician and, you know, change the game. You have to be outside of it, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, it's foolish, you know. People like, oh, there's just a few bad apples. No, you're the good apple jumping into the bad barrel, son.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
They're cooking you up, man, and that's what happens. And that was something that also really intrigued me about the psychopath roundtable that we had, was that it's actually an infection. You can actually become a psychopath if you have contact with a psychopath for long enough. If they exert enough influence on you, they can actually take all of that empathy, all of that thing that really makes you a human being, all of that heart that you have, all of that creativity, they can actually infect you and eradicate it from you and turn you into one of them.
Absolutely. Well, right now, going on right now, just north of San Francisco is the Bohemian Grove gathering where they literally cremate care. They cremate the effigy of Care. They actually go through this practice, this ritual of cremating Care. I mean, think about that for a second. They are abandoning themselves of dull care.
Be gone, dull care.
Yeah, they're ridding themselves of this feeling of care, this concern, empathy. And they're really doing this, and they're open about it.
We just made a video about the Bohemian Grove that we released a couple of days ago. If anyone would like to go check that out, we have our little own spin on that.
You know, I do have a TV on the back here. We could play it on air. We'll do that next segment. How long is it?
A minute and a half,
or a minute 15 seconds even.
Oh, okay. Well, in the meantime, in that case, we could probably play it this segment, and I'll just try and chuck it up. If you just chuck me the link through the Skype here, I can chuck it up on the TV behind us and play it for the listening audience. Huh? That'd be nice. And also, the other thing that I wanted to stress to people is that this system isn't just isolated to America, okay? Many people listening probably don't know that the Prime Minister of New Zealand, John Key, who used to work for the Federal Reserve and everything, I think it was a couple of years back when Bohemian Grove was going on, he took a trip to northern San Francisco right at the time that Bohemian Grove was going on. And I found that was particularly interesting. Interesting? Mm-hmm. What is the likelihood? What is the frickin' likelihood, really, that one of the leaders of a country goes to Bohemian Grove at a time that it's on and he ain't actually there to participate in the cremation of Care? All right, so without further ado, it's an Israel reference. We're going to play this little video for you guys here. Let me see if I can get the settings all sorted. There we
are. All right. Let's get the show under the way.
Great.
Oh, come on, baby. Don't do this to me.
A 45-foot-high stone owl ready to sacrifice an effigy is Moloch, 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 the great-horned giant Babylonian pagan fire god mascot of the Bohemian Grove. Watch Moloch's annual ritualistic thrill show spectacular, The Cremation of Care. Businessmen, bankers, politicians, and presidents side by side, ridding themselves of dull care. For 2 weeks in July, the elite are out to cross-dress, drink wine, and touch penises. That's right, it's Man-O-Rama. This hooded rogue satanic summer camp with skulls is men only. Get down and dirty in the woods.
For my food, a barbecue. A baby barbecue. You want to barbecue the babies.
Remember, we spiders come not here.
Mr. Durgan, say hi to Moloch for me. Canaanite deity. I'll see you at Eyes Wide Shut, baby.
Located at 20601 Bohemian Avenue, just up the 12 freeway in Monte Rio. Exactly 75.2 miles north of San Francisco. Turn right on Fulton, left on Occidental, right at Green Hill, another left at Brighton, right at Bohemian Highway, and one more right at Bohemian Avenue into there.
There you have it.
That's brilliant, guys. That's freaking funny.
Thanks, man.
That, you know, that one... That is not a funny subject, the Bohemian Grove. That is not... Oh, sorry, we got a helicopter flying overhead here. Not totally uncommon in Los Angeles.
Sorry. No. It's totally because of the Bohemian Grove video, you know. The New World Order is like listening into the Vinnie Eastwood show, and they go, oh my God, these guys are playing a video about my God, Moloch, let's fly something over their heads and think about it. Yeah.
Throwing out the sound. Yeah, that's a really dark subject. You know, I had a – I'm sitting here, you know, we're working on this thing and editing it and watching just videos and reading. And if it's true and what's really going on there, if they are really, let's say, sacrificing a real human being there. And there is that famous video
plenty of rumors.
It does sound like someone is screaming in the video. And, you know, there's really no way to prove it outside of the video. But nonetheless, if it is true, it's a very dark – creepy subject. The fact that these old white rich men who obtain some degree of power and wealth in this world are gathering together, no women, stay-at-home ladies, and, you know, they're deciding the fate of other humans throughout the world while they're playing their little games up there is a very creepy subject.
And,
so,
and literally cremating care. I mean, regardless of the rumors, like, they're really doing that.
We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Don't you go anywhere. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. It's the final segment here with Joy Camp. Have you guys got a website again there? Or just go to the YouTube channel, I guess, huh?
Yeah, we own the domain name www.thejoycamp.com, but it'll take you straight to our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/thejoycamp. Please, please check us out. Subscribe to us on YouTube. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Befriend me, befriend Kevin on Facebook. We're nice guys. We like to expand our friendship, our online friendship. So please, yeah. YouTube.com/thejoycamp.
We got over 30 videos that range from fluoride.
36 videos, to be exact.
Fluoride to Bohemian Grove to Bilderberg to, my goodness, the royal family.
The RFID chip,
drones. We're just covering one subject at a time and trying to make light of them, trying to make them accessible to people that aren't part of the choir that we preach to. Trying to reel some of those people in from across the end and bring them onto our side, you know? So have at it. Have fun.
And ladies, if you're listening, I'm single.
Yeah, and that was actually a concept that we were talking about over the break. It's really hard for truther guys to find a truther girl out there, you know? It actually really is hard. I don't know,
we're in Los Angeles where there are beautiful people everywhere, but to try to find a female woman who is, you know, independently thinking for herself and not caught up in the vanity and the status of this place is so far has been impossible for me.
Yeah, but again, it comes into the problem of pigeonholing. Like when I first met my Mrs. Sarah, she wasn't a truther. I mean, she's a little bit different to most girls. Like she could see auras and spirits and stuff like that on occasion, but she didn't. And she'd been taught about the New World Order just through her Christian family and that kind of thing. But she wasn't a truther. She wasn't really into any of this stuff. And at the time that I met her, I wasn't really into it either. And it's been a couple of years now. Like I think our anniversary is the 23rd of next month. And it'll be 7 years. And what I found very interesting is that over time, I've, you know, developed from what I was to who I am now, probably the most popular truther conspiracy theorist in New Zealand, and one of the only ones really to be doing videos and a radio show. And she's actually really developed with me. I mean, it took her a while to kind of wake up at thing because she hadn't been busted by the cops like I had. That if you ever want to wake somebody up, call the cops on them with false pretenses, and the cops will arrest them, process them, and convict them anyway. Right? That's a surefire way to get you fracked off with the system, yo. I'm not recommending people do this, obviously, but you know, it works, and you can't fault something that works. And what I find really awesome is that she, despite the fact that she wasn't a truther, now she is, okay? And I see her yelling at the television, and I was like, oh, my baby, that's so cute. And I see her, she goes, oh, look, there's an Illuminati all-seeing eye. And I was like, I love it when my baby notices the Illuminati symbolism.
You're living out my fantasy, man. That's my dream.
Yeah, it was just like, damn, that's so sexy when you notice that New World Order symbolism. That gets my juices flowing.
Oh, it sounds so nice.
Too true.
Yeah, it is awesome. And, you know, for the first couple of years or something, I barely even acknowledged her name, you know, like whenever I'd say, like I call her Sarah now, but for the first couple of years, whenever I'd refer to her to anybody else, it was always referred to as M apostrophe MRS, Mrs. And that was pretty much it, bro. And now that it's kind of developed the relationship, something's a hell of a lot better. But I've said for a long time, there really does need to be a truth of dating site in it, because it's so hard to find girls like that, man.
I was just thinking about that the other day, thinking that if I knew, you know, coding, if I knew how to design websites, the perfect one to create would be a networking site for truthers, for people who, you know, who are like us.
For truthers who want to get it on.
And not just for, it could be for dating, but could also just be for, you know, to establish a network amongst ourselves, connect people, like a Facebook for truthers. I think that'd be amazing. Well,
truthers have already taken over Facebook as far as I'm concerned.
That's true.
Yeah, I feel like it, doesn't it?
Yeah, my truther friends are starting to outweigh my other reality friends by the day. I mean, I like that.
You have other reality friends?
From my past, you know, people I went to school with or whatever. But it's always interesting to see that when you see, like, when an event occurs or something. Let's say, right. let's say most recently, Kate's baby, right? So you see the contrasting viewpoints. You see half of these people making fun of it and making fun of the royal family and posting videos about it being a reptile child. And then you see the other half who are like, oh, joyous day. The princess has given birth. Oh, great. I hope they name it Charles. Like all this kind of crap. So I see both of these in my wall.
Reptile child. I think I hear a song in the works here.
Oh, yeah. Or just a really good poem.
The vile reptile child with a bile and a something with a bile duct in there somewhere. I don't know.
Gotta
have bile in there at least.
Yeah.
Vile bile the reptile child. All right.
There it is.
Yeah, you wrote it.
The song just wrote itself.
Better trademark.
All right. Let me just quickly add that before I forget. The vile bile duct of the reptile child named Chuck.
Yeah. Chucky.
Yeah.
Baby chap.
Yeah. And how much wood could a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood?
See, there you go. Tongue twister. Tongue twisted up.
Mm-hmm. Well, hey, actually, the most difficult tongue twister I've ever heard in my life was, try this with me. Say wristwatch.
Oh, I know this one.
Benny's really good at tongue twisters.
I'm a big fan of tongue twisters. Wristwatch. Which wristwatch? There are Swiss wristwatches.
Is that it? Now say Irish wristwatch.
Irish wristwatch.
He's very good.
How about this? Ready? She stood on the balcony, inexplicably mimicking him, hiccuping, whilst amicably welcoming him in.
Okay.
Hang on. Irish wristwatch.
Irish wristwatch.
Yeah, this is Kevin. Irish wristwatch.
Which wristwatches are Swiss wristwatches?
Which wristwatches are Swiss wristwatches?
I'm an actor. I'm from the theater. I love tongue twisters.
I am not. I'm not very good at them, but I try, and that's all that matters is trying.
Yeah. You ever notice sometimes when you're doing your lines or something, and it's like there's some kind of a block, like you know the line, yet somehow it, like from the brain to the mouth, it just comes out like.
Yep. Every day of my life.
And it's quite funny when that happens as well. And it's like, that's why I like Jackie Chan movies, is because at the end of every Jackie Chan movie, they've always got these outtakes, these bloopers. And one of the funniest one was Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker in Rush Hour towards the very end. And Chris Tucker's got to say Chinese for thank you, I think it's Xie Xie Ni. And he goes, Ni Xie Xie. And Jackie Chan's just laughing at him. And he's like, I can't believe it. My English, he can't even say three words. You gotta have fun, man, and that's also what I like about actors and creative people in general, is that, man, they have a hell of a lot of fun on set, bro. Seriously, I mean, even though it's some of the hardest work you'll ever do, you know, 14-hour days and that kind of thing.
That's my career, and I love it. I love working. It's really fun, and I mean, the rewards are great, but. Finding the balance between that and trying to speak the truth is difficult. We'll see what happens.
Well, and again, this is something that I really want to help develop in the future. Is you know how you got this current system, and it's all about promoting scumbaggery, debauchery, stupidity, so on and so forth. I say, because that system's no longer relevant, we create a new system, and we're going to create everything that currently exists in the current system has to have a replacement for it created in the new system. You see, you know what I'm saying? You've got to have intelligent movies written by intelligent people who are actually really clever, who are actually funny, you know? Because I every now and again you watch a sitcom, and you know that a sitcom's not funny when the studio audience laughs and you don't.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, well, that's... we wouldn't mind going mainstream with what we do. I mean, I think that these, where we're at right now, these issues that we deal with in our videos are becoming more mainstream and becoming less taboo. And I think that I could feasibly see Joy Camp on something like Comedy Central or Adult Swim doing exactly what we do now, but with a network and reaching a larger audience. I think that's definitely within reason.
Yeah, well, let's hope psychopathic executives from Comedy Central see this show and go, you know what, these guys are actually really onto it. They're funny, they're fantastic, they got great philosophy. Let's get them on the show. Let's give them a slot on the network.
Yes, that's what we're hoping from this particular interview.
Yeah, I doubt it, but you know. This show's not really that popular, and it dawned on me actually yesterday, as little as yesterday, that I'll never be the most popular show on air. But whenever I complain about people that are messing with me, the amount of people that show up to support me is so overwhelming. So even though I may not be the most popular on mass show, the people who are loyal listeners to this show are like the most loyal listeners in talk radio. And I just want to thank all of you for listening, for sharing this broadcast, for getting it out there. And also want to thank you guys from Joy Camp, Benny and Kevin, for coming on with me today. And the website for them is thejoycamp.com, which is linked to youtube.com/thejoycamp. Guys, it's been a pleasure and an honor and various other nice adjectives too. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having us.
Thank you, man.
Bring us back soon.
Mm-mm-mm. Will do. Will do. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, bear in mind this is a listener-supported broadcast, so if you're capable of supporting it, go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. That's Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question, and Eastwood isn't go ahead. Make my news. And make a donation. Make a $5 donation a month if you can by clicking the subscribe button through the Illuminati Control PayPal, which you can then incidentally fund an operation like the Vinny Eastwood Show that exposes the Illuminati. Isn't that great? We'll be right back at some other time.